Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. And after a long break, it's very good to see you all again. We've all just listened to Finance Minister Melusi Gigaba give his first medium-term budget policy statement. I'm not sure what the rest of the panel think. We'll get there soon. I thought it was a very different Melusi Gigaba to the one I've come to know and write about over the years. I remember very clearly attending a dinner with him about 5 or 6 years ago, probably even more, where he specifically said to a group of businessmen that he didn't believe very much in private public sector partnerships. Today was very different. He was laudatory in his comments about the business community, insisted that they needed to be partners with the government going forward into very rough waters. And Tim Cohen, I thought he was a different guy.
Yeah, I mean, this was interesting. I mean, you could tell there was a lot of attempts, or, you know, his intention was to sort of pour cold water on everybody and to be kind of rational and inclusive, and really he didn't pull his punches in the speech. I mean, that was the good part about it, was that he never tried to hide any of the problems. He said specifically several times, you know, that there's no point in doing that, there's no value in trying to pretend that we're not in a difficult state. But still, he had lots of problems to deal with. So, yeah. You know, it's not as though he could have done much else, I suppose.
Least of which, or right up there, Sikonati would have been the president himself, who sat or kind of vaguely sort of lay in his bench, listening with eyes closed to his finance minister talking. And he would have had to hear some pretty hard facts that the revenue shortfall that SARS is going to face this year is 50.8 billion rand, much higher than originally thought. Growth is down, the forecast for growth this year is down from 1.3%, which is already low, to 0.7%. Deficit has grown from under 4% to 4.3%, the forecast. Lots of bad news, but as Tim says, he wasn't spare with the facts. I mean, they're harsh and they're there. I know you're a critic and I'm a critic as well, but what did you think of the budget speech?
I'm glad you're not accusing the president of falling asleep.
No, I didn't know. He was listening carefully with his eyes closed.
He closed his eyes to take it all in.
Absolutely.
And internalize the bad news.
Yes.
Now, you are quite correct in saying he didn't try to hide the facts, but that's only half the story.
Yeah.
He only spoke about the successes they have made and neglected the failures they have made. And those people that he spoke about having appointed at South African Airways, they have not started. That's just the start. The chief executive starts on the 1st of November. The chief risk officer, I think he's starting a week later than that. And that is just the little part. The big part is, what are you going to do with that 13 billion rand? Yes, you've gotten rid of Dudu, but she had hollowed out the whole organization there. There's a whole lot of effort that must be put into South African Airways. And of course, it is the failure of the government, and of it's an idealistic problem here. When he says we need South African Airways, he knows only too well that we don't, but he's trying to protect those jobs in order to save.
I was interested in that, because he says, you know, his argument for South African Airways, for retaining it under state control, is that South Africa needs an airline, a flag carrier, to project itself internationally. So why doesn't he just split the airline into a foreign airline flying to Africa and the rest of Africa and international?
It's nonsense.
And privatize the domestic one.
It's nonsense that we need a flag carrier. In fact, we could get any of these governments to pay us for carrying that flag on their own aeroplanes, royalties to the treasury for carrying the brand South African Airways. We'd get rid of the assets.
And you seem to suggest that all that was left remaining to do was to find 3.9 billion rand. Is that?
Yes, and then he says we are going to sell this family silver in order to fund this thing that will never work. As Telkom pays them a billion rand every year in dividends. Now, today you are selling Telkom. What are you going to sell next year when SAA needs a bailout? What are you going to sell next year when Dinel needs a bailout?
But with the state pulling out, if you're a Telkom shareholder, that's got to be good news, no?
That is good news.
Yes.
But if you're a taxpayer, that is bad news.
Charlotte Matthews, he also spoke about mining very briefly. He said something along the lines, and I can't find it in the speech at the moment, we were once a great mining economy, and we can be so again. What has to happen to get back to great?
Well, he identified some of the issues in his speech. He said he certainly identified the issue of regulatory certainty, and he said we've got to achieve this in the mining industry, but he didn't actually say how or what he's going to do about it. He made a lot of good noises, but there's no action plan here. Obviously, the matter is before the courts. So.
Is a medium-term budget policy statement the place for detail? Or is it reasonable that you use it to set a tone, obviously within broad targets, broad fiscal targets?
Well, it's the kind of it's like the interim statement in some ways. Yes, it is the place for very specific numbers, because you're constantly updating them, and you're constantly making sure that your targets are, you know, that everything is pointing in the right direction. I thought that this, the revenue miss that you were talking about, was just extraordinary. I mean, and just to put it into context, last year the missed revenue was 0.3 billion rand. This year it is 50.8 billion rand. I mean, that is a fantastic miss. He said it was the highest miss that they'd ever had.
Yeah.
But you know, I'd like to go back and see. You know, I don't think that it's not only the highest; it's the highest by an extraordinary proportion.
Fortunately, to save all of us, Hilary Joffe is on the line from Cape Town. Hilary, good afternoon. To get from 0.3 billion and undershoot last year to an undershoot of 51 billion, what's gone wrong?
Peter, I hate to correct my colleague, but it was in fact 30 billion last year. And the highest revenue shortfall in the Democratic era was 60 billion in the year of the financial crisis, 2009.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think this is certainly the highest since the financial crisis. The highest peacetime shortfall, if you like.
How did it happen?
Well, I think it's the economy falling short, but it's clearly also some issues specific to tax policy and what one would call tax administration, in other words, SARS. So I think, first of all, it's got to the point where more tax increases aren't bringing in more tax. They're actually alienating taxpayers and starting to weigh on the economy to the extent that you kind of raise rates and you get less revenue, which is kind of a well-known phenomenon.
Which is the point that you made in a column this week. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, yes, this shortfall comes on the back of Pravin Gordhan's tax increase last year, right?
Correct. In fact, quite steep increases in especially personal income taxes over the past 2 years. So we're kind of hitting the wall here, I think, in terms of what you can extract from a narrow tax base in a weak economic climate. And add to that corruption in government, which makes people think, well, why should I pay if nobody else is in government? And a SARS, which, though Mr. Moyani would deny it, is by all accounts in a bit of a shambles. And you've really got some serious problems on the revenue side. And I think the kind of overperformance of revenue, which the Treasury had got used to in the past and relied, the finance ministers of the past had relied on, I think that the budget documents today actually make it clear that they're not expecting that much more of it. So that's a serious problem. And really, these numbers, Peter, are absolutely brutal. I have never seen unvarnished numbers like this. And I think what this budget is, to me, I mean, some people have welcomed the realism, you know.
Yeah.
Gigaba's not trying to varnish this in any way. I think what it reflects is a complete paralysis. No decisions have been made. The Treasury gave him these numbers. He looked at these numbers. It's kind of what they gave him 3 months ago. There's no effort to do anything on the tax side, even at a very high level, or on the expenditure side, even in a high-level, non-detailed way, to manage it down, or even decide whether it should be managed down. And that's all been kind of flipped over to this committee, which is going to report to President Zuma, which presumably after the elective conference will apply its mind and come up with maybe something in February, or maybe not.
Yeah. Hillary, just help us, or help me, or maybe all of us. There was much made before Pravin Gordhan left the government about fiscal consolidation. Had we made promises to the ratings agencies or creditor countries or creditors generally on fiscal consolidation? And if so, what were they?
Yes, we had made promises, and we had even made progress, in fact, on fiscal consolidation. Each year we had sort of not quite made the target which we set ourselves, and we'd had to push out the consolidation a little bit, and we said to the rating agencies, well, we have a plan. That was a sort of Pravin Gordhan Ntlantlanene era, if you like.
Sorry, Hillary, so when we're talking about fiscal consolidation, is it the budget deficit or is it debt v. GDP?
Both. I mean, it's basically debt to GDP. The kind of core promise of fiscal consolidation is we will stabilize the level of the public debt to GDP. We will stop it rising and we will start to bring it down. And to do that, obviously, you've got to run lower and lower deficits.
Yeah.
Because each year that you run a deficit, you add to your borrowing. So I think the fiscal consolidation promise is that we were bringing down the deficit,
yeah,
and therefore at some point the level of the public debt would stabilize,
yeah,
and it was, even in February, they pushed it out and out a little bit, but even in February it was supposed to stabilize, I think, next year, 2018-19, and then start coming down.
Just before we let you go, he said that there were four things that the government had agreed to do to meet all of these horrible challenges. One, he was going to pare down the contingency reserve so that there was less money available in emergencies. Second, he was going to consider fiscal efforts to address the revenue shortfall. Is that tax increases? Thirdly, he was going to maintain the ceiling on non-interest expenditure. And fourthly, government recognizes that the best way to ensure the sustainability of public finances is to achieve higher economic growth, which in itself, just recognizing that growth is important, is a big step.
I do think that was important. In fact, the language of the budget speech, I must give him credit, the language of the budget speech was the language of growth and so on. And I think that is quite important as a recognition. But yes, the first three measures, sticking to the expenditure ceiling, yes, that is quite a decision. They did actually bust the ceiling this year because of the state-owned enterprises. They've now gone over the ceiling, and one of the things the rating agencies had hung on to was that they were sticking to the ceiling. But now they bust it, and they bust it because of state-owned enterprises, and that even though they raided the contingency reserve, which they had in place, and they've drawn it down, I mean, they're planning to draw it down by quite a, I think it's tens of billions over the next couple of years. So then they've got no reserve in place if something bad happens.
Are we after the speech, more or less vulnerable to credit ratings downgrades?
Oh, definitely more.
Right. Thanks very much, Hillary. And we'll see you after the break. Welcome back. Panel, he was also quite firm about the corruption, I thought, at Eskom. He's going to clamp down on it. There's going to be a new board by the end of November, as there has been at SAA and SABC. Is there time to get a new board in place by the end of November? Can he do it, Charlotte? I mean, and what sort of skills, what sort of people will he be looking for?
Well, first of all, he'll be looking for honest people.
Yeah.
He may have a few possible candidates up his sleeve. Eskom itself has quite a strong sort of middle to senior management level, but
yeah,
he needs to make the right appointments there, and of course he needs some independent people as well. But you know quite a bit about this one.
New board at Eskom?
Well, that new board will be the second new board since June. Let's start there.
Yeah.
Now, you can't govern a country like that.
Yeah.
There's something called stability, and the market wants that thing called stability.
But the current board is clearly useless. So, I mean, it's not...
The previous board was clearly useless, clearly useless, and the minister in charge of that board is clearly useless and less than honest. Yeah. So she's still going to make these appointments.
But Gigaba is putting his own reputation now very much on the line by promising that this is going
just
to
like
be
just like he put his own reputation in 2014 when he appointed the board that corrupted Eskom. Yeah. Just like he put his own reputation on the line when he appointed the board that corrupted Transnet, that corrupted
Denver. Do you think that the intervening years, that he might have learnt how not to let that happen to him again?
Nothing in his body language, nothing in his speeches, nothing in what he does shows us he has learnt. He should stand up, and he missed a great opportunity to say, guys, I was minister of that particular department. I did make some mistakes. Some of the appointments I made led us to where we are today. Gigaba is the last person to talk about cleaning up the board. He should start by acknowledging that he is the one that messed it up, all of the public enterprises department, and then only then and then only can we realistically believe what he says. We have to watch carefully.
He does have this hurdle to he still has to do the confessing, I think.
He still has to do
correct.
The confessing,
but nonetheless,
which will give
nonetheless
him a lot of credibility.
He's able to say here, the failures of governance, leadership, and financial management at Eskom are of grave concern. Eskom's debt has become a significant risk to the entire economy, and Eskom is simply too important to the country to fail. That's a different Malusi Gigaba, who simply appointed the people he was told to appoint back in 2011.
Peter, those are mere words. Let's get this carefully.
Absolutely.
Those are mere words. Yeah. There's action that should follow, and there's never been action where Malusi Gigaba.
Well, we're going to have to wait for a month, thank goodness, because he's promised, and he was very upfront about how he'd met the SAA board target that he'd set himself, an SABC board, and he's got until the end of November.
The difference here is that it's not him that will be appointing that board. It will be the same Lynn Brown that has been appointing all these boards that have continued the mess Malusi Gigaba created. That's the difference here. It's not him appointing that board. He says government will appoint.
Presumably, though, he has more influence now in cabinet or in the government than he ever has had. And I mean, if Lynn Brown produces a nobody or somebody with a dodgy record or whatever as chairman or CEO of Eskom, the Treasury is just not going to allow it to happen. I mean, Treasury has the ability to impose some restrictions in terms of its guarantees on who gets to run the companies for whom it issues the guarantees.
Well, yeah, this is true, but it's also not true because you know that there's now this new mandate that he referred to in the speech. And I also think it's quite a lot of it is where you stand within cabinet. If you are the public enterprises minister and the president says appoint these people, you appoint these people. If you're the finance minister, you have a different responsibility and you have a different function, and your function is to try and sort of inject some reality into the whole process. But just on the Eskom thing, he makes these very valid points about Eskom and so on, but he has shifted out. It's not in the speech, but he has shifted out the government guarantee of Eskom's debt, which is 250 billion rand, which was supposed to end this year. He's shifted it out for another 5 years. So I mean I suppose he didn't have any choice but to do that. But there is a difference between what happens at the speech and what happens in reality.
Sikonathi also promised to bring in a strategic equity partner for SAA, which everybody's been asking for a long time.
Just one step back to at Eskom.
Yeah.
Malusi Gigaba has got absolutely no say, not even a veto power on who becomes the director. That's exclusively the ground of the public enterprises minister. He may express his desire or lack of desire for a particular individual, but the public enterprises minister appoints that person, and if the president said that one comes onto the board, that one does come onto the board.
You can't surely be arguing that all we heard today were simply words and that none of this has any effect.
Show me action, then we can talk.
But he's just given the speech, right? So we've got to give him a bit of time to
show me action, then we will talk. Okay. I have said to you, and I will say it again.
What do you think of the new SAA
board? Watch carefully what Malusi Kigaba does, not what he says.
Yeah. Mm. What about the new SAA board? What did you think of it?
First, we're talking about the strategic equity partner. We've had that for over a year now, and there's no strategic equity partner. Bain and Company did produce that document he's talking about. Yeah. Guess what?
4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Yeah. 18 months ago. Yeah, guess what? They are still waiting for an appointment with the finance minister. The document was ready 8 months ago. Bain and Company has not even met Malusi Kigaba to give him that document. He just knows the document is complete to introduce a strategic equity partner and all that reintegration of the airline businesses. He has not even met the people that produced that report. And he then stands here before the world and say, we will do this. Watch you very well, my words. Watch the man's action,
sure.
Not what he says.
For sure.
But you know, I mean, it is interesting. You were saying that the you know, a lot of the speech did seem to be directed at the president. You know what I mean? He did seem to be addressing the president, and he is putting down. This is his opportunity to, you know, to put his case publicly, so that, you know, if anybody does something different to it,
yeah,
you know, it sort of creates a crisis in government, you know, the a lot of that was, and he did use that opportunity. I would give him credit for that.
That he definitely did.
Charlotte, he did mention nuclear. He said, and this is the only mention of it in the speech, during the presidency budget vote on May 31, 2017, President Zuma reaffirmed the view that, quote, with regard to nuclear energy, we iterate that the program will be implemented at a pace and scale that the country can afford. Malusi Kigaba himself has said at least twice in the past 2 weeks that we can't afford it right now. So what were the Russians doing here, and why do we have a new energy minister?
Well, it's not just that. At this very moment, our mining minister, Minister Zwani, happens to be in Russia, attending a Platinum Group Metals conference, which would be very interesting to know who's paid for that visit. Yeah. It looks as though the country is deeply beholden to Russia on the nuclear deal. And again, what Kigaba says and the actuality could be very different. He's simply making the right noises to appease the public and the foreign investors.
But he, whatever he may be told to do, unless the presidency, as seems to be the case, is taking over the function of budget allocations, which then he will have to fund somehow. He basically has made it clear, and he seems to be reaffirming it here when he requotes Zuma, that we're implemented at a pace and scale we can afford it, and then he's saying we can't afford it.
And he actually hasn't made any allocation for nuclear in this budget.
Yeah.
So there's no money set aside for it.
Right.
So there would have to be some sort of special vote for it.
Absolutely. Mm. Give him credit for that. He has refused to go ahead with the nuclear program. And that may very well be the signature on his own dismissal letter. We have heard all these rumors.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, how real are these rumors that Kigaba himself is now under threat?
Well, the president has always blundered rumors before the action, and I wouldn't be surprised now. Of course, he could not have gotten rid of him last week when he got rid of the other people.
Yeah.
Now that he has made this speech, and I would believe that speech is quite stupid from the president's perspective, he's got his men to do the nuclear, and Kigaba may very well not be able to present the budget next year.
Good grief. And talking about President Zuma getting rid of people, Tim Cohen, there's a story on the front page again of Business Day about some new probe request, and the request is from an unknown person targeting Cyril Ramaphosa. Could he really fire Cyril Ramaphosa before the ANC December conference?
Well, yes. You know, I mean, this is part of theoretically a competition, an abusive dominance competition program. But you know, it's just incredible how the arms of the state have now completely fallen, completely part of you know, the political succession battle. I mean, it's very depressing to see this, I think, that they've suddenly trumped up this charge. I don't think it's...
it's a very thin charge, you know. Yeah, it almost looks like a disguised attempt on Glencore, because Shanduka was Glencore's partner.
Right.
So, and you know that they attacked Glencore on the Optimum deal.
Yes.
So.
Just coming back to his whole attitude there, he was very nice about business, and he was very complimentary of what business had said, Charlotte. I mean, is there any reason to at least feel a bit comfortable with that? Because he wasn't always as nice about business, and he was very good, I thought. Not good, but I mean, it was interesting to watch the tone, change of tone on tourism and getting people in and out of the country much more easily.
Well, he's very diplomatic, because in fact, when he was first appointed, he had that meeting with business leadership, you remember. So he's been making the right sort of noises. But, I mean, clearly he recognizes the importance of business.
But I mean, the fact is that they are now desperate. I mean, they're absolutely desperate. I mean, I don't want to make another, you know, error. So, you know, let me hedge this in.
No figures.
But you know, they have the budget has set growth at a certain level, and they have under hit that point for a long time.
Yeah.
For lots of times, that's happened.
The problem with the whole thing is that wherever Malusi goes, things collapse in a heap. One, corruption at public enterprises. Briefly, he became Home Affairs Minister. He lost exactly 22,000 tourism jobs. Today, without even looking back and saying, I have done a lot of things which would buy him a lot of goodwill and the credibility he desperately needs. He needs as much credibility as he needs growth. And you cannot... No one can take you seriously if you can't even acknowledge a mistake you have made. At a very superficial level, just generically admit, hey, we have made mistakes, but let's fix this.
What would it take? I mean, what would it cost a politician? Let's say a young, you know, fresh-faced ANC political leader on the rise to admit that he'd made a mistake.
Julius Malema, look at him. Look at him.
He had to leave and start a new party.
Exactly. And look at what he says now, including by saying, I made a mistake by supporting that man. Of course, he has not admitted to the corruption that he was accused of.
Sure.
But look at him now.
But he's a different party.
Isn't it different party?
It's a different, I mean, it's easy to say I made a mistake if you've changed
party.
He's still the same man. He's still the same man. He's made mistakes in the past, and he has now stood up and owned up to some of them.
Yes, no, that's true.
And that has earned him 1 million votes.
There we go. Thank you very much for listening to us, and we hope to see you again next week. Bye-bye.